So welcome everyone to our first retreat for the year. And I'd just like to honour all your efforts to get here. Wherever you've come from, some from Europe, Australia, Oroville. And perhaps you might be feeling a little bit of the momentum of that travel, of that effort right now, the busyness of getting here, the busyness of the day. So I just invite you to take a moment to settle in, to be here. Perhaps to sense your body in the on the cushion or on the mat. Just allowing yourself to feel welcome. And as you do that, you might even notice almost a slight confusion inside as you sense what's there. And this is sort of like the fleeting awkwardness you meet when you meet, or you find when you meet someone really attractive. This meeting inside. But then it settles a little as you stay with it. As you stay with the meeting. So first of all, I'd really like to acknowledge a few things. Like, first of all, Annetta and Jonathan, your wonderful work today. And in setting up everything, thank you so much. I really honor the way you go about it. It's fantastic. And everyone else who contributed today in bringing the retreat together, helpers at registration, showing people around. It's really appreciated. So next I'd like to acknowledge Jayaji for your continued efforts at holding this space. For quite a while now. Your persistence and love, generosity, that really is core of why we're here. So thank you so much. Certainly why I'm here. And then sort of going a bit further then, really acknowledge all the traditions, the spiritual traditions that have also contributed and held the space of inquiry over the centuries that lead to us being here as well. All of us are part of that now, this living tradition. And another thing I'd like to acknowledge is that, you know, I've sat with a number of you before, and now I'm here in this place, and that's sometimes a little bit weird, I think, when your friend is up there in front of you like that. So I just want to acknowledge that there's space for that weirdness as well, if there is any. And I guess for me the importance is this space of friendship that to me is what the tradition is all about. Mm. So, quick one on practicalities. I think we had to mention what the yoga would be, yeah? Mm-hmm. For the week coming. And as far as I get it, it's right, Anstey, you're doing 2 days, is that right?
2 mornings, yeah.
And would you like to briefly explain what that is?
Well, we're not going to do yoga practice per se. We're going to do slow movements, slow Qigong-like movements. There's some standing, most of them standing, and a couple of them sitting, mainly sitting, and some stretching on the ground. But they're very slow movements, and if you have a solid self-practice, and I'd encourage you to continue with your practice on the two rooftops that are assigned for that. So this is more if you really appreciate something slow to wake up. It's getting the joints loosened up. Some stretches that may help sit, that may help with sitting, and basic coming back to the body in the morning. That's what I'm doing for the 2 mornings, tomorrow and the day after.
Okay, so those first 2 mornings, and then after that, Keith, you're taking over, is that right?
Yeah. I will follow the same intention, certainly. I'll attend the Ernst Cab class and see where we go from there. It will be yoga. It won't be a fast yoga in any way, shape, or form. I teach a lot of all-level classes, and I love working with groups, diverse. I may offer an occasional challenge to make something harder, but by no means is that necessary. It's really inclusive, focusing on hips, just opening up the places that really are helpful when you're sitting or meditating for a long period of time, and also making it fun. I mean, that's part of it, both in tuning into the body.
I just want to say that both of these guys are yoga teachers and teachers of different kinds for with decades of experience. So feel free if you just want a little input, even if you have an ongoing practice of your own. Feel free to come. If you have an ongoing practice, feel free to do your own thing. But don't leave them alone in the morning. You'll have plenty of time to rest later on and enjoy the richness.
Okay. So I just wanted to say a few words about approach and the approach that helps in meditation, in spiritual practice, and certainly ones that I've taken to heart in my life anyway. So so for me, so what's important to acknowledge is in a way that we're entering into a relationship in the next 7 days. And it's a relationship between you and us and with your other yogis here and with the people in the ashram as well. So there's a number of different levels happening. And I think for me, one of the keys to this relationship that we would really encourage is this gentle kindness towards ourselves and towards everyone here. And I've been reading a book about Chogyam Trungpa, and it's interesting that in all the things I've read about him before, in some ways I never knew how much he emphasized this gentle kindness. And it's coming through in this book that it's on so many levels, with everything that he did to people, with people in his group, and everything he encouraged, the base thing was this gentle kindness as a foundation for how all the relationships would happen. And this is, to me, really such a key thing that it's what creates safety. It's what enables something in us to rest and soften. And it's when that safety happens, then we can have a sense of being ourselves. And so we encourage that, one, through rest, through the body, which affects the mind, but then also in our restful kind approach to ourselves as well, which affects the body. So I've been studying Hakomi psychotherapy for the last 4 years now. And one of the keys to this is not so much all the techniques you learn, which are, there's a number of them as well, but the absolute core of this is the personhood of the therapist and the relationship between the therapist and client. And you're guessing right if you would think that that is about love. The loving presence of the therapist is what then has been proven time again through research to be the key to healing. So the invitation then is for you to, I'm going to have the snores of the retreat. The invitation is to, for you to take up this self-leadership of love, of kindness, of gentleness. So in a way, this is the how then the safe and loving relationships on the outside then become internalized as well. So when we talk about welcoming, welcoming is, you could think of it of a, like in a way, like a newborn child, and they come to this world. When a child comes into this world, you know, the absolute key thing, importance, is a sense of welcoming and safety. This welcoming of, like, the day you were born was this fantastic day, this beautiful day. And if we can have that sense of overwhelming support for ourselves in this way, that sense of welcoming the whole of us in that way, everything that comes up, then we're starting to head towards this healing relationship with ourselves. So once this foundation of restful, this loving, restful, welcoming presence is there, then we can start this process of curiosity. And curiosity isn't this fuel for awakening. It's the charge in a way. Curiosity is the part that enables us to look into this mind-body process that we have going on. And start exploring, what is it? What is it to be a human? What is it that means being alive? What is it that is important to me? In some ways that'll be individual for each person here, and yet will also be underlying themes that are common to all of us. Some of you might know Subhana from Australia, Zen teacher and Insight teacher. We were talking about community and commitment and welcoming. And she was telling me a story about in Zen, traditional Zen, in Japan, one of the traditions where when a teacher takes a student, the student comes with $5. And a couple of nails. Yeah. But can anyone guess? Does anyone know this story, what this is about? So the $5 is to buy incense. For the teacher to buy incense for the student. So that when the student comes, the teacher is burning a light for this student. So the teacher is creating this atmosphere for the student to come into. But not only that, the nails then are representative of the commitment to the student. Do you know what the nails are for? The coffin.
Oh.
The coffin.
You have to explain what a coffin is.
Yeah. So that this is saying.
You have to explain what a coffin is, I think.
Does anyone?
A lot of people.
In German? Sorry. Can someone translate coffin?
In Hebrew?
Does anyone not know what a coffin is yet? Okay, so what this is representing is that the teacher, I'm here until you die. That's my commitment to you. It's unwavering commitment. Now that is welcoming. And the reason I say this is this is the attitude you want to have to yourself, because you're with yourself until you die. Imagine sitting with someone who has that level of commitment to you. Strong, huh? Someone who is there for you all that time. Nice feeling, huh? So another area where we might find ourselves tested is our openness to nourishment here. And in Hakomi, they talk about how we might have a barrier to nourishment. So we'll have a way when it starts coming towards us, then we'll say, oh, no, it's fine. I don't need. Don't worry about me. Or some other way that it sort of just gets pushed away. And I'm sure we all know this, huh? We all have our own ways of doing it. And the invitation here is really to simply be present. in this fire of thoughts and ideas about what love might be about. Just sit and see for yourself. Because I know for sure I'll be hitting my own love barrier at some point. Jaya always presses it. This is simply welcoming that as well. This approach of continually welcoming these barriers. I don't think I have too much more to say. Pass it on to you.
I'd also like to welcome you here. Can't not say it. And also to thank Anton for jumping in. As you may know, Gemma Polo was supposed to come. She was planning to come and then couldn't come. And at fairly last minute, I just checked with Anton if he would be willing to dive in. And he said yes right away, pretty much. So I was very happily surprised. I've been trying to get him to teach for about 10 years now, so.
One of my barriers.
And as a way of beginning my talk, I just feel like acknowledging two things as well. And one is this place that some of you have been before, this spot on the earth. And just remembering the first couple of years that we had retreats here, that we were actually on the ground. Like there, one year, I think as an improvement, we had a plastic huge billboard. So, you know, those huge advertisements that now, instead of being hand-painted like they were 20 years ago, it's somehow printed on plastic. So then in India, luckily, they can upcycle from noxious advertising to a wonderful meditation floor carpet, which was good in the sense of actually you could feel every curve of the ground, if you were into that. And you could also feel every bite of the fire ants that were closer to you. So just to kind of feel through the concrete, the ground that already that first time was very magic. But it was much easier to feel how we are in the home of other creatures and that they do allow us to be here. But we are in their home. And we would see the big lizard in the rocks here. Were you here? Do you remember? The first couple of years, were you here? There was the big lizard that would move around sometimes here. So just to kind of practice feeling through the concrete and also appreciating how, especially in this ashram, they've managed to do what they can to make things enough comfortable. But it's not like a place where it's just throwing money in to make it fancy. And sometimes we might wish for a little more fancy, like when they put the roof, that it could be waterproof. But at least it's shade. And at least there are not actually walls. And so we can really have a feeling of being in a meditation hall without walls. And it's not only symbolic, it's also a beautiful symbol to practice meditation in a space that gives shade but is open. It gives a nice smooth ground now, but it's open. It's a good symbol, but it's also an actual experience. It's a different experience. So to also welcome that sense of support and shade and openness. And it can be a kind of guideline. It's a very good guideline for practice, that there could be enough support, enough protection, but not too tight, not too enclosed. So in fact, not closed is the point. Our tendency is we go towards closed, because we go with our head. And always it doesn't work. Does it work? And so we just keep feeling how it's not going to work. So let's not close it completely. Or not all day. And it's not just sort of to get through the retreat better. It's much more important than that. It's much more important than a retreat. However important retreats can be, they have been for me, they have been for some of you. And for quite a few of you, it's your first retreat, so don't feel alone if that's you. But just to have the chance to be left with dignity of less. So I just want to check the word dignity. Is that a word that you know? I'm not sure at all how to translate the word dignity, though. I was trying to think before. Anyone else? Because even if you speak English, what does dignity mean, actually? You can try to feel for an experience of where you felt some dignity or you noticed some dignity in someone. We've gotten into a trap of associating, connecting dignity with moreness, with a state of going for more. I remember a long time ago living in Lucknow, and one time with some of my friends, we got together in an auto rickshaw and we went to the one fancy hotel in Lucknow. And some of my friends said, let's get out before the entrance and save a little dignity. So we wouldn't get out of the auto rickshaw instead of whatever, at the time, probably Ambassador was the only car still, at the fancy hotel. So we were laughing so hard as we got out that it's not as if no one noticed us getting out of the auto rickshaw. And then we had that experience that you may have had, don't bother if you haven't had it, of paying, like, at the time it was probably 50 rupees for a 2 rupee chai. Now it might be like 300, I would guess, for a terrible chai, really horrible chai. Just not worth it. But it was fun. I'm not saying not to have fun. But the sense that dignity is about showing off is what is like the culture that we're swimming in. And it's, even if we look down on that as a way of trying to get some other dignity, it's still really easy to kind of believe. Somewhere, somehow, a little more of something will leave me with dignity, will give me dignity. And it won't. we know from our own experience, whatever your life experience is so far, you already know. And if we could actually accept, if you can accept your experience already, that you already have. That in a way, the word dignity already is about something that can't be given, it can't rub off. But we can be left with it. So, a little bit sadly, sometimes our main experiences of dignity are in hard times when something has been ripped away that we thought we wanted, we thought we needed to have our dignity. When it's gone, we find it didn't affect our dignity. We're still left with dignity. There's still an out-breath that's beautiful and not owned. And I would like to introduce the possibility of spiritual practice not being based on the negative, not being based on only those experiences of loss. And then I discover losing anything does not affect our dignity. That's a good experience, but if that could not be the only basis for our spiritual practice, if that could be part of it, and not the main part. It's also very tempting, as it is tempting to think that more will give me the dignity that I also secretly know I belong to. It's also equally tempting to get into working on my negativity, to think, well, at least I have some dignified work. At least I have some dignifying work. At least I'm busy with something important because it hurts. So this is garbage. This is not Dharma. It's garbage means it doesn't belong on your plate. It belongs in the compost. It doesn't mean that it's like wrong and a mark against you. But we need to find the place of that belief, of that we put in charge of our lives. The temptation, how easily we get involved with working on what's wrong. And can you check just now, like probably today, all of us were somehow working on something that was wrong. If you can get the inner feeling and the inner charge of that experience, just get a kind of quick feel of it. First of all, how hard it is to stop, which is a sign. Isn't it easy to say, well, just a little bit more, a little bit more. Let me try one more time. And then I'll be presentable. Then I can show what would be dignified if I were in touch with dignity. So it can be part of your practice to feel that kind of creeping ant feeling in a hurry, busy. Of working on a problem. But secretly knowing that you're escaping, that you're escaping from your dignity. And I would love to share with you, it's also from the Zen tradition. I think it may even be Subhana's. It's one of my favorite teachers that I never met, Dogen. And I just happened to come across these lines from him that actually I used to always carry with me, and now I carry them with me in my computer. But here I brought the book as well. And I just came across this one, again, one of my very favorite teachings of his. It's from a chapter, this is a translation by Kazuaki Tanahashi from the Japanese. He was one of those sort of cool, innovative teachers who was the first one to teach in the local language, which was Japanese at the time, to teach men and women together, to teach lay people, not only monks, etc. So that gives a little bit of feeling context. And it's in a chapter called Raising Sages. Raising in the sense like you raise a child, and maybe also other meanings of the word raising, bringing up, lifting up, floating up. And then a sage, that's wisdom or a wise one. And we can already feel where there may be a tendency to want to be included in the project of raising sages, and also to want not to be included, or to assume, oh, that's not me. I'm not a sage, I couldn't be raised as a sage, or I couldn't help to raise a sage. Or I hope I will. And it's nothing wrong, it's just to feel when the hope and fear are operating. It's not dignity, that's all. It's not still, it's not comfortable, it's not home. It's not letting us be with ourselves. It's letting us be with our stuff. And my invitation for all of us is to be with ourselves, whatever that is. Also, the book is called Enlightenment Unfolds. So again, there could be the hope. We hear the word enlightenment. The hope, maybe I'm about to be. And the fear, I'm sure I never will be. Enlightenment unfolds, it just gives this hint of how it isn't one of those things that we could hope or fear for. It's something that's not a thing that unfolds, that is with you, and that its nature would be to unfold, to come unfolded. When we allow some of the things that Anton mentioned, we allow ourselves to notice that there is support from people who are here, person to person, and people who are not here. So the only thing I would add or disagree with about the nails is that my experience is even after death, there's still support. So one of my teachers died, and I had the privilege of watching his body be burned and going the next morning to be there for the ritual of taking the ashes, which was very generous of the family, because traditionally, it was a traditional family, also Hindu family, that should be only men, but they just allowed all of us, male, female, whatever the body looks like, can come. And the next morning, the early morning, cool breeze, huge Bodhi tree there by the burning ghats in Lucknow. And the ashes are what's left there, it's still hot. The body is not there, the wood is not there, the camphor, the ghee, the cloth is gone. Or it's now a different form. Hot ash. And then an example of unfolding. A few words came in my mind that I couldn't say I thought them, and I couldn't say something outside of me put them there, but simply, beautifully, powerfully, you are everywhere, as a statement and a question about the teacher whose body was ash. when one phrase or verse, so we could say when a few words permeates, that means it goes throughout, it goes everywhere, permeates your body and mind. So when a few words go everywhere in you, it becomes a seed for illumination. Illumination, so light unfolding, like enlightenment. But illumination, even you can hear just the sound of the English word, illumination. It's round and it's about light. So when some words come through you, it so happens that they can come through you. It fits, and there's a welcoming, and there's a sense of it resonating in your dignity that, yes, it's allowed to come, it's allowed to resonate, it's allowed to be true in you. It becomes a seed for illumination, for limitless kalpas. So as close to forever as we could imagine. So limitless kalpas is a kind of amount of, huge amount of time. And he's saying limitless kalpas. It sounds a little bit like a love statement or a love song. Does he really mean limitless kalpas, forever? Does he mean forever? Or is it that like love language? Where my son, it was one of those mornings, it's not going to be one of those mornings every day, so I thank you for allowing me to be here with my son, which is the only way I can be here. He's 6 years old. And he will behave like a six-year-old. This morning was one of those wonderful mornings where he woke up and I said, I love you more than the highest number. So this is the way Dogen is talking to us, like this kind of love. When one phrase permeates your body and mind, it becomes a seed for illumination, for limitless kalpas, so forever. But with a sense of time, forever with time. And this brings you to unsurpassable enlightenment. When one dharma, which is support, living support, or one wholesome action. So even if you think, oh, I would need some very special words or I would need some very special something. But even just one wholesome action. Already you're on retreat, so check. Permeates, when one wholesome action permeates your body and mind. It is also like this. So it becomes a seed. A seed that doesn't lose its life force next year or the next year. But whenever you're ready, the patience, that dedication that Anton was speaking about so beautifully. But your own wholesome action. You don't have to wait till you meet your guru. A seed for illumination, for limitless kalpas. Moment by moment, a thought appears and disappears without abiding. So that he's giving such a lovely teaching for our practice. Mindfulness now is like a rock star, so I know you've heard the word. You may or may not have practiced it or been to a concert or whatever. What mindfulness really is this moment by moment, a thought appears and disappears without abiding, without staying. It comes as if out of nowhere, and then it is gone. Letting it be that it happens that way. Moment by moment, but wait, this is a great teaching about how mindfulness fits in to meditation, which is something else. Moment by moment, a body appears and disappears without abiding, without staying, or without, because he doesn't say staying. Abiding would be like, I abide in a certain house, at a certain address, in a certain country. So I take up some territory, and I think of that as mine. But a thought, moment by moment, a thought appears and disappears. And isn't it so? with a thought and with any experience of the body. As it appears, it is also disappearing. The sound appears and disappears. And we would like to get caught up in its appearance, or sometimes in another mood, we get caught up in the disappearance. But just moment by moment, a thought appears and disappears, body appears and disappears without abiding. So the sound doesn't stay, and like that, the thought doesn't stay, and like that, the body experience doesn't stay, has nowhere to live. Our sort of mistaken education is that we get busy because we think it should have somewhere to live. It needs somewhere to live. I've got to everyone else must have somewhere for it to live because they look like Buddhas. They're meditating so calmly and quietly, we think. They are meanwhile having a thought that appears and disappears without abiding but recurring, returning. So restfulness is where we realize it. We don't have to provide an address. We don't have to provide a house for every single thought and every body experience. We don't have to provide a residence. We don't have to provide a home place for our experience of body and mind. And when we get less busy with that, we start to feel some kind of home. And this is really cool the way Dogen is putting it here. So moment by moment. So it's again, we can catch ourselves where we want to just get it right so that we can be done. We don't want it to be moment by moment. We want to get the moment so right that we can check it off the list. What he's saying is the list is something that appears and disappears without abiding. So don't believe in your list, and certainly don't make your list rule you. Moment by moment, a body appears and disappears without abiding. Yet, the power of practice always matures. So he's talking, he's giving a very, can almost say clever introduction. How could we feel our experience of time in a more real way? And what is it that is as if coming from nowhere and then completely gone? It has had its effect also. It's drawn a line in the sand, the water, the air. But that's not all. There is something, so a wholesome action, a phrase that resonates with you, an experience being here in the home of other creatures, in contact with the earth, and being an inescapable, being inescapably part of now a group of people, that every little thing you do has ripples, has effects, little waves to everyone. And everything they do has effects, has little waves that affect you. Sometimes we'd feel like, and yet secretly what we have wished for all our lives is to feel our participation that we can't escape from in life. And so here we are. So the dignity of less, where one phrase will do. I was in a very difficult situation this summer. It was very hard. And I thought of asking someone to come for a visit. And then I thought, well, never mind. And I just mentioned to another friend, well, shall I ask so-and-so to come for a visit? The response was, why not? And it was a good response. It resonated with me. So then I said, okay, would you like to come visit? And the answer was, no, I can't come to visit. I can't afford the ticket or whatever. But the phrase, why not? So that was one of those experiences that appears and disappears without abiding. But the phrase, why not, has come back in the right moment so many times. in the last 7 months. When habitually I might have hesitated. And then the celebration of life said, why not? And then it doesn't matter. There could be a no. It's really actually not important at that point. I can invite you, and you're free to say no, because I'm asking freely. I'm asking for the love of the why not. So the power of practice, some kind of power that even if we lose track of it, even if we're disloyal to it, even if we don't take good care of it, Dogen is saying it always matures. And he's talking in a time frame where he's mentioned limitless kalpas, so that might, it might mean if we don't take care of our practice, it might take a long time before we feel the fruit. But if one dharma, one phrase, one wholesome action, so then we get back to this word permeates, it goes throughout you. You let that response in yourself that said, why not? Oh, why not? Why not? It's a good way to come down out of the addiction to the more. And by being in touch with our dignity in the less, in the one word, the one wholesome action, the moment by moment, here's a thought that disappears as soon as I notice it, as soon as I realize it, as soon as I hear it or whatever. Out of a deep shame, out of a deep sense there probably is something wrong with me, we feel that we need to reconfirm these experiences that don't stay, that don't need somewhere to live, the body and the mind. And then we leave out what's most important and nourishing to us. We leave out our home, where we are. We're actually there and at home. And so the managers mentioned that they're here to make your life easier within the possibilities of the situation, within the circumstances. And Anton and I are here a little bit to make your life a little bit harder. And so a little bit apologizing, and a little bit like, this is what you came for, and we're happy to, if you wish, remind you that you came here, that you are here. And you may not know why you're here, and you don't need to know why you're here. If you felt to come, here you are. So you may know that you're welcome, and you may have noticed that you're welcome to lie down. You may notice that when you lie down, you can actually start to feel how tired you are. And you may have noticed that you're welcome to sleep in the hall, if that happens. And at the same time, it's not a snoring contest. Like, there was one time one man who was so happy to be relieved from the meditation competition of who can sit longer through more pain or whatever, to be able to lie down for meditation, that sleeping in the hall was okay. That he really wanted to snore the loudest. So if, a couple of things, if you snore, it's okay. And like I snore, so in the morning meditation, if I have already been up doing my own meditation before the schedule starts, I probably will sleep in the meditation before breakfast. So I meditate on my side or face down so that you won't hear me snoring. So that's one recommendation from my experience. If you know you snore, or if you're going to be eaten away by worry that you might snore, lying on your side or face down can be good. Lying face down for meditation anyway is very worthwhile to try. For many people, it's more deep. Then the second is, if you notice as you start to rest more that you're feeling more tired, don't panic. What usually seems to be happening is that you're actually getting in touch with how tired you are. and within 2 or 3 days you will be rested, which doesn't sound like a big deal, but have you been rested since your last deep rest retreat? For many people, it would be the first time of actually feeling rested in your life. And so it actually is a big deal, because a rested body and mind opens out another way to meditation, which is highly recommended. So feel free. Also, feel absolutely free to sit for meditation if that's what you feel better with. Totally fine. It will be mostly different process if you're lying down or if you're sitting. And we'll talk about that privately in the one-to-one meetings, if you like. Anton mentioned the importance of resting, in that one of the main things that can happen is that our defenses start to melt a bit, and we can actually start to feel ourselves. And sometimes it is the first time that I have felt myself, but I think it always feels like as if the first time that I feel myself. It just has that quality of first-time-ness, because it's not a repeating mechanism. It's not a mechanistic thing. It's not machine. And so I'm happy that Dogen, at least the translation, mentions the word, the power of practice. Because resting, we could say, is in itself a good thing. We feel more easily kind. We feel more able to absorb kindness when we're rested. We more easily may have actually a helpful idea. One in 1,000 when we're rested. Shifts in our practice can happen quite effortlessly when we're rested. And when we say coming home or feeling ourselves as if for the first time, not getting caught up in that, is it the first time? Just letting the commentary fall to the side again and again. There is power. And our experiences of power have usually not been very pleasant. The experiences of power that we've had consciously have usually been unpleasant. And so when we feel in touch with power through resting into ourselves and letting go of showing off, pretending, we can easily freak out. It can feel some, we could start to take it as if it's a power that's going to overpower me. We could feel like a victim of that, or we could just feel that it's overwhelming. And we don't trust power per se. And so gradually, it's not only friendliness in the usual ways, but just noticing how is it when you are aware of being in the presence of power through practicing meditation. Sometimes there may be fear, but even so, kind of as if you could reach through the wall or the membrane of fear, the skin of fear, to feel, what is this actually? And sometimes we may feel it is friendliness or it is stillness. We may actually be able to start to feel a quality there. And that's good practice, and it can start to reduce our prejudice against power. And start to let it move us. In a way that lasts forever. In a way that has dignity that we're not self-conscious of, so that we notice later there was a kind of grace that we weren't putting on. There was a continual coming together or completion that wasn't a closing.
Yeah.
Are there any questions so far?
Everyone hear the question?
She didn't really understand what I mean by dignity.
With everything.
Yeah. So our education is mostly around if you spit on me, then I should be angry or I should feel small or I should have some reaction. Which there could be some response, not from the education. Or there could be no response, not from the education. Because there's something in a human being that doesn't depend on how you treat me to be precious. And so it is this kind of, like Dogen was having this love language, so it is this actual love affair with that. So the most precious of all, we can allow ourselves to love that and to gradually realize we're allowed to be in contact with that inside. It starts inside. And with practice, then insight is everywhere. Does that make sense? I can give another way, another kind of example. The culture is so strong that we should earn the right to be. That for me, the first time I experienced it really fully was as a mother, where there's a child that, first of all, I'm allowed to love 100%. That was the first time I felt like I am allowed to love someone 100%. And then that starts to make it, we're allowed to love 100%. Actually, that's what a human being can do. Okay, right, that things start to make more sense now. And then no matter what he does and doesn't do, I may have a response. I may need to tell him no or whatever. But it has no effect on my connection with him and my support of him. And so for me, it was the first connection with another human being that I had the experience so fully, the way that Anton was also talking about the nail and the incense. Exactly. Except if we go past the coffin, past death. That there is love that is not asking for you to be nice to me or behave the way I think you're supposed to behave. Or, and again, it in a way it's so simple, it's also so obvious that this is how the parent is with the child, we wish. it's easy to just like not actually hear it. But we can start with ourselves. That if I drop something, there might be a part of me that freaks out and is like, oh, did anybody see that? Or sorry, or it's your fault, or whatever reaction. And even so, there's a steadiness of connection. So we can, there's to bridge across all of our conditioning, we can talk about acceptance, we can talk about friendship, we can talk about, there's different ways that we can start to grow our ability to feel what we are and what we also are made for, let's say. We're made for that to happen to us and through us. And so I also like in Dogen's language, he talks about the one phrase is a seed. So a seed, the nature of the seed is to grow if it gets the right conditions. So if we can feel we have a seed and it has life. And what is a seed? We have to keep reminding ourselves, what does a seed do? What does a seed actually do? The only thing the seed does is, then we start to be more happy about giving what the seed needs. And then this sounds like a small thing, and it is basic, but we don't have it. We think we have to kind of sit ourselves up straight, give the water, give the sunshine, give the good soil. Come on, get out of the way. Weed it, come, like, ugh. And then, of course, we hate our practice if that's how we're doing the practice. And we can pretend to like it on top of the hating it, on top of that disconnecting from actual experience. And that can be one way to go that's never ending also. But if we feel the seed and how good when the seed grows, like there's something also in a human being that likes that. Likes to see a seed sprout and see it grow to do its thing. So here it's a human heart that's not the emotional heart, it's not our psychology, it's not our past. It doesn't care a bit about our past. It doesn't care a bit about your psychology. You can have as many psychological problems as you want. And the seed does not care. So sometimes we need some relief from the psychological difficulty, the psychological smoke. And we should have that. But it's not the main practice. To feel your love of the seed of your love. So we could say in another way that dignity is where it starts to dawn on us in our mind and in our inner ecology that no matter how wrong I do it and no matter how right I do it has no effect on the seed. It doesn't make me more worthy of love or enlightenment or whatever I think the goal is. And it also, in terms of just being a right or a wrong in that right-wrong fear-based structure, it doesn't help me also. If I'm moved by fear, I'm not actually helping. But if I just notice I'm being moved by fear, okay, this is helping. If I notice, okay, this is Here this comes, and here this goes. Here this comes, here this goes. And that's not all. So we could say the two things. One is feeling our love of the seed of love or awakening. Because what a seed does is it unfolds. And also the incense gesture, giving the money for the incense. Asking for help that there could be an atmosphere of sacredness, of honoring your dignity, at least sometimes. And then enjoying that. And also slowly, slowly is good. So I think that. Anything else? Okay, we have time also. So let's have a very short meditation. And if it helps to not think of it as a meditation, so then you lay your body at rest instead of forcing it. So we're not gaining value by having some sort of, by matching some sort of ideal posture. We're not more dignified by matching, by copying some idea. That would be the opposite of honoring our dignity. Feeling from the inside what honors the preciousness of a human life in this moment. So, and playing with towards restful. Towards what helps you in and the body itself actually feel the support of the ground, which is always here. And there's an out-breath. Isn't there? How is it to be on the ground? In the openness of this night air and these night sounds, and there's an out-breath, a giving. A letting go. Letting the ideas just wash out with the out-breath. Letting the tensions wash out as the breathing out happens. And especially feeling the feeling as out-breath comes along. And leaving room for maybe a feeling of relief with letting go. Maybe a feeling of lightening or brightening as the out-breath lets go by itself. So you can't get it right, but we can't also escape out-breath. It is happening from time to time. And maybe we can kind of give in to the mood of breathing out, lightening our load. The defenses sort of melting away like a sand castle in the waves. There's enough room for body and ground. And possible friendliness there between body and support. There's room for the night air on your skin, maybe. For night sounds. And there's an out-breath. There's the moment by moment experience of what we call out-breath. Appearing and disappearing, like writing on the sky. So not enforcing that, but enjoying the discovery of the lightness of your experience, how here it is and how gone it is. So here and so gone. Moment by moment. So feel free to continue here in the hall if you wish, as long as you wish. And if you're quite tired from the day or from the travel, please rest well. And we'll see you in the morning.